When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All of these friends of yours said, well, you're going to be so happy when you retire. Psychologists like to use this equation that our happiness at any given moment is our expectations minus our reality. So not only is your reality one of real grief, but your expectations were that this was going to be great. So there's this huge gap between what everybody said that you ought to feel like in retirement and what you're currently feeling like.
Right. I've been surprised that no one, I mean, absolutely no one has talked about the grief and the sadness.
Which is shocking to me.
Yeah, me too. I felt that way too.
Welcome to How To. I'm Courtney Martin. People don't like change. While it's pretty much the only constant in our lives, we still don't know how to deal with it, especially when change strikes to the core of who you are. That's what this week's listener is struggling with.
My name's Patty. I'm recently retired from 50 years in corporate healthcare administration. And everyone was telling me, oh, it's going to be great. It's the best thing I've ever done. It's just going to be so terrific. And I was surprised how sad I was. I was just melancholy.
Like a lot of us, Patty was looking forward to retirement. She's one of those like super effective people. You can just tell the moment you meet her. She knew how to manage people. She knew how to make things happen, even in the context of the complicated healthcare system. But she was ready for a new season of life, less of a grind. Pretty soon, though, she felt a little unanchored, and she couldn't help thinking about what comes after retirement. You know, the end. Take us into your life pre-retirement a little bit so we have a sense of what you are grieving. What were your days like before you retired?
Oh, you know, it kind of centered around my Outlook calendar. I had a couple of direct reports and making sure they were getting the tools that they needed to do their job. And we were all focused on doing something together and getting to the end of the week and having had some kind of a success or at least some camaraderie around a project that we were working on.
I'm hearing you are a woman who loves teamwork, collaboration, a woman who loves to feel needed, all of which I can imagine has been thrown into kind of a pot of lots of feelings. And Patty, will you tell us about a moment when you felt that melancholy?
I think it probably hit most profoundly after the holidays, come the first of the year, when I was really settling into not having to wake up to a staff meeting or plan my day around 8 hours. It was just me. I didn't have a group of people around me. I didn't have anywhere to be. Everything was on my agenda. And even though I had a lot of things to do, it's like a blank page was sitting in front of me. It's like, I've got to write a book and I have no idea what the topic is. It's just, you know, 500 pages of blank pages. And I just started feeling sad about that.
Patty's sadness over her open schedule is about so much more than simply filling time, right? Like, work is how we define ourselves. It's how we build our days, build our identities. And without it, as we heard from Patty, there's a sense of profound loss. But, you know, Phoenix, ashes, that's where Patty is at, in the messy middle of it all. And to help her through this stage, I'm bringing in Brad Stolberg. He's the author of the new book, Master of Change, and he's also on faculty at the University of Michigan's Graduate School of Public Health. And he's met people like Patty before.
You're a real pusher. Like, you were clearly very driven and good at your job and very affecting at your job. And when an elite athlete retires, they almost always go through a period of grief, but you can be elite at anything that you do. And if it's a craft and if it's a big part of your identity, moving on from that is always going to be hard. And I wish that we could do more to normalize it. And I'm so happy that you called in to help normalize it for listeners.
So on today's show, Brad is going to teach us how to bravely face change so we come out of it stronger and, well, changed. Stay with us.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
On Debt, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Debt, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Brad decided to take a closer look at change, you know, to examine what big title shifts do to us after experiencing upheaval in his own personal life.
I became a father for the first time and then again for the second time. I moved across the country. I suffered an injury that took me out of a sport that had just been an enormous part of my identity. I had a book that became a bestseller kind of out of nowhere that really shifted my career. I suffered a really painful family estrangement. It just felt like change after change after change. And then, of course, there was the COVID pandemic. So it set me off to want to better understand change and how we navigate these transitions and if it's possible to find stability through all of this change.
And I know you've written about that you are not unusual, Patty's not unusual, that the average adult will go through 35 big life changes, retirement being just one of them. So why do we hate change so much, Brad? Given that it's the constant state of the human condition, why are we so resistant to it?
Well, I think that some of it traces itself back to this term homeostasis. It essentially was this observation that living systems really like stability and they like order. And whenever we get to disorder, they want to get back to order as fast as possible. And that had been the prevailing model for conceiving change for the last couple of centuries. More recently, though, the research community stepped back and said, when we look at individuals and even entire organizations that thrive over the long haul and that excel and burn bright for long durations of time, what we find is that they don't go through change in that way. This new model is called allostasis, and it's order, disorder, reorder. We crave stability. It's in our nature. But we never get back to where we were. We move forward to somewhere new. Mm-hmm. So homeostasis, the old model, comes from the Latin root homo, which means same, and then stasis, which means standing. So it says we achieve stability by staying the same. Whereas allostasis comes from the Latin root allo, which means change or variable, and then stasis, which means standing. So it says that we achieve stability through change. Mm. And it has this beautiful double meaning, which is we can be stable through change, and the way to do it is through changing, at least to some extent.
And it really circles us back to Patty's experience of grief, right? Because if she were just dead set on heading back to where she'd been, there'd be nothing to grieve. But because she's looking forward and trying to evolve and, you know, in this reorder model, then there is something to grieve because she's not going to go back, right?
Exactly. It feels like you are in the murky middle still in that disorder phase. And the other thing that I'm hearing is it's only been the better part of 2 months. When you're in the middle of disorder, it can feel like forever. It's so hard to be patient, But this is a massive life transition for you. Clearly, it's going to take more than 6-7 weeks. You know, if you think about identity kind of like a house, Patty, this was a really big room in your house, and you spent a lot of time in it. And now, essentially, what you're asking yourself to do is leave this room or renovate and remodel it. You don't do that overnight. And of course, there's going to be a grief and in a sense of loss.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I do, I have a growth mindset and I have a maker's mindset. So there's no end to the kinds of things that I want to do and can pursue. But like you said, I do I want to remodel or do I want to like add an extension? Do I want to, you know, that shed in the backyard, should I turn that into something new?
Well, and even worse, Brad, I feel like you're asking her, which I think is the absolute right thing to ask her, but you're asking her to sit in a half renovated, half destructed room. You know, it's like you're asking her to sit in grief, which is messy and not particularly pretty, especially for those of us who like to go from order to reorder. That's like a very hard feeling. I really identify with you, Patty. So I might be projecting here, but like my least favorite moment in any kind of like renovation experience, whether real or emotional, is sitting with the mess. And Brad, isn't that what you're saying? Like that part of what Patty has to do is just sit in the mess for a little while?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And there are things, and maybe we'll get to them, that can help sit with the mess and help usher in what's next. And I think that your growth mindset will be an enormous factor in that.
Yeah.
But right now, I almost wonder if the growth mindset is maybe even getting in the way a little bit. And what I mean by that is when people go through big transitions and big challenges, it's very easy to say, well, I'm going to have a growth mindset. I'm going to practice gratitude and think of all the things and count all of my blessings. And that's really good advice. But sometimes you don't feel gratitude in the moment. And sometimes it doesn't feel like you're growing. And something that I found in my research really over the last 5 years coming out of COVID and where so many people had various life transitions is that growth and meaning do follow big challenges and big transitions, but it has to occur on its own time. Like you cannot force the growth and meaning. And if you try to force it or you try to expedite the process, sometimes you inadvertently end up slowing it down.
That's a very good point. Kind of an aside, or maybe part of this, I reread for the first time in, you know, 1,000 years, I reread Siddhartha. And it makes sense. But I feel like when I read it at 16, yeah, great, interesting book. And then I read it at 70, completely understand it now. And that's basically what it is. You just have to go through it.
Here's a line from that book, Siddhartha, by Hermann Hesse. Everyone can perform magic. Everyone can reach his goals if he is able to think, if he is able to wait, if he is able to fast. Listen, disorder can be really uncomfortable. This is not easy stuff, and it doesn't help that time slows down when we're struggling.
A researcher named David Eagleman, who's a neuroscientist, he took participants of this study to an amusement park in Texas and had them ride something called the SCAD, which stands for Suspended Catch Air Device. And I want you to picture just a mattress that's 200 feet off the ground, and you get on this mattress and it just free falls. It's like bungee jumping without the bungee. The funny thing is there's a footnote in the experiment that they had to go to Texas because this ride wouldn't be allowed in any other state. So just an extremely harrowing ride. And what Eagleman, the neuroscientist, did is he had participants, while they were on the ride, predict how long it took for them to fall. So the minute they got off, he said, how long did it take you to fall? And then he had them gather themselves and about an hour later, watch other people on the ride. And what he found is that when the participants were in free fall, they overestimated how long it took by almost 50%. Whereas when they were on the ground, when they had stability and they watched other people on the ride, they nailed the prediction with really good accuracy.
Wow.
So It's also this beautiful metaphor that when it feels like the ground underneath us has been pulled out when we're in free fall, our perception of time slows down. And it's so important to just know, to be kind to yourself and say, this is just my brain slowing time down. It feels like forever now. But when I look back on this period, 1 year later, 2 years later, maybe even 5 years later, it won't feel like it was so all-encompassing.
I'm anticipating that. It's the old, the days are long and the years are short adage, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And you won't be going back to the same Outlook calendar and to the same team of people. What you can take with you are the values that undergirded your leadership in the healthcare system. And those values, whether they're drive or dedication or teamwork or collaboration or mastery, you tell me what those values are, but those don't have to change. And those kind of become your sources of ruggedness that you can lean on to navigate through the disorder.
I get that.
So I'm kind of curious, Patty, yeah. Like, do you have a sense of what those values are?
I do. The one thing that I enjoy doing, I'm very attuned to supporting everyone who's on the trip with me, whether they report to me or not. I don't need to take glory in something. It's always going to be a collaborative effort, and that has always been important to me.
That's so wonderful. I'm hearing contribution, mentorship or coaching, some mastery, teamwork, collaboration, these sorts of values.
Right, right. And I'm kind of to go back to what you were talking about, allostasis, is, you know, when we change, you go from something to something different. I remember, it made me think when I sent my kids off to college and I was no longer in mom mode, I reframed my role as a mother to, I was a mother emerita. So it's an honorary role. It was no longer a job. It was no longer that I had to do on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, like the professor's emerita, it's something that, yes, my role has changed. It's still a very important title, but it's a different way of approaching it. So I've taken the change and reframed it.
I love how you did that. Do you think that there might be an avenue to do that here?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, exactly what I was thinking when you were talking about allostasis. No, yeah.
I love what you're saying about the values being able to be constant. Because I don't know if you felt this, Patty, but when Brad was describing that, I felt myself breathing deeper. Like, oh, okay. The grief is about the circumstances, the context. It's not actually about needing to change some core part of who you are. You can still be you and evolve into the reorder.
I like that.
There's something about that that's really reassuring to me, Brad. I think part of our resistance to change is feeling like we're being asked to be a different person, right? And it is different, but you can like hold on to the core of what you've always cared about, right?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. The central construct in the book Master of Change is this notion of rugged flexibility. And the ruggedness, those are your values. Those are the things that make you who you are. The flexibility is the roles in context and environments in which you operate and apply those values.
That's beautiful. I love that term. Does that term do things for you, Patty?
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
So it's a loss of a part of you, but the deeper, more underlying part, the values, that is ultimately, like, that's how you are stable through change, is by constantly leaning on those values and holding on to them tight. And then the hard work, and it is hard, is figuring out new ways to practice those values and to apply them.
If we're going to go back to the house metaphor that Brad used, Patty's foundation is still there. Her core values are still intact and providing stability. But we still got some work to do. After the break, we're going to don our hard hats and hammers because it is time to renovate that room that used to house Patty's work identity. Don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We are back with Brad Stolberg, author of Master of Change, who is helping our listener, Patty, figure out how to think about retirement.
I think a big part of what professional satisfaction is for a lot of people is that you get to work at the height of your powers, if you're lucky, doing something that you're good at and you care about, and you actually get to affect change that you can trace back to yourself. And it's so satisfying, right, to be able to exert your will on something and have it change in a direction that you want it to change. And when that's taken away, it can lead to a significant loss of fulfillment. And what oftentimes people find helpful is other ways to experience mastery, whether it is learning to powerlift, whether it is running your first 5K, whether it is gardening or tap dancing or learning the clarinet, but some kind of activity that allows you to see that tangible improvement that maybe you got at work that now you're starting to miss.
Yeah, that's definitely something that is part of me. I took a break from my professional world with a small p, and I started a restaurant. I mean, it's like a complete, 180. And then the recession hit. So I was in it for little over 2 years, and the world just fell out from under me. Mm. I found myself at loose ends with that one, for the first time feeling like, oddly, feeling like a failure. This was my livelihood, and I had just, fallen through. And I started taking on other types of things to try to give me a world to stand on again. So I took, I took acting classes and improv classes, something to get my confidence back. And that really seemed to help a lot.
Feeling fulfilled is a great way to start. If you're not sure what to do, go back to your values and ask yourself for each one, what's a new way to practice what I care about? Your answers can lead you to new pursuits that either fill the room or become new rooms. You can also go back to previous interests and see if there's still a spark there.
You might not have the final design, and that's okay. You just have to start building. In the research literature, the term for this is behavioral activation. And it essentially says that during times of change and transition, we don't have to feel good and motivated to get going. Often we have to get going to give ourselves a chance at feeling good and motivated. Or we don't have to know the answer to start. Sometimes we just have to start and then learn the answer. So I think lowering the bar from I need to be passionate about this or I need to know that this is right for me to I find this interesting or this is an activity or a pursuit or a community that I'm curious about, and then pursuing those curiosities and seeing what happens.
I like that. Just the energy of moving, taking that first step, whether that's the final step or not. It doesn't matter. It's just doing that next thing.
Yeah, you give yourself a chance.
Yeah,
Because I think that passion is something that we think that we just find. It's like lightning striking. But far more often than not, we develop it over time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think there's a role for pleasure and delight here, Brad?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's something that folks like us, and I'm categorizing the three of us together here, so type A, pushers, growth-driven, sometimes we forget to experience joy. Yeah, there's the pleasure that comes from running a marathon or leading a department of 100 people or launching a podcast. The hard work leads to pleasure. But then there's also the pleasure that comes from dark chocolate or a comedy or just giving yourself permission to just enjoy life and be giddy for no other reason that you're here. And as odd as it is to say, that can be challenging for really driven people.
Yeah, and especially when... especially when I'm in the middle of, like, I'm just in the middle of grief and the middle of sadness. I keep thinking, you know, I'm looking forward to being out of this. And I know there is an end to this sadness. I don't know where it is, but I'm really looking forward to that sliver of chocolate on my tongue. You know, just all I need is just the essence of it and I'm fine.
They can also co-occur. And I don't mean to say that they will, but you can feel deep grief and sadness at the same time that you also start to experience joy. Like there will probably be some overlap.
Yeah, you're right.
Of those two things. Mm-hmm. And just because you're giggling or you're experiencing pleasure doesn't mean you're not honoring the grief and the loss and the sadness of this transition. You can have both of those emotions in the same week, in the same day, maybe even in the same hour.
Yeah, good point.
Why does it feel like we have to learn this incredibly basic lesson over and over again? You can feel two feelings at once. Lord, I swear I have to be reminded of this like at least twice a week. So, Patty, you're not alone. Well, I actually wanted to dive into something here, Brad, which was the physical. I actually also hear in what Patty shared like a muscle memory issue, right? When you're in the disorder phase, you're used to waking up, you know, getting your coffee or your tea, figuring out what your meetings are for the day, getting yourself dressed and ready for, you know, a packed day. And it's like Patty has just stepped into the abyss, right? She's waking up and her muscles are all poised for that experience and they're not having them. So is there something actually like somatic and physical about being in the messy middle that you could help us figure out?
What you called muscle memory, the coffee, the meeting, the opening the calendar, the commute, those are all ways to mark the passage of time and to delineate one thing from the next. And when those things are missing, time just feels warped. One thing bleeds into another, and there's often a feeling, a loss of meaning that comes with that. So I think that a good place to start there would be trying to develop or come up with some new rituals that you could start inserting at regular points throughout your day, and then building around those introductory ones. So maybe it is a morning coffee, which maybe you still have. Maybe it is you read for 30 minutes at a certain point of the day, or you take a daily walk at XYZ time, but just building in some structure, if you haven't done that yet, could be really beneficial.
Have you been playing with ritual, Patty?
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. I was thinking dehabituating, or if that is even a word. You know, for 50 years, I've had this, you know, these habits, these, you know, get the coffee when I was commuting, grabbing the bus, you know, looking at Outlook and stuff. So I had these habits that I would go through every day, as I think a lot of people do. And it's changing those habits to new habits. But I think the idea of a ritual is a lot more approachable to me. It's not so, I think it speaks to that growth mindset or the progress mindset of making something sacred.
The other thing I was thinking about is community. And just wondering, you know, it seemed like you got so much community through work. And I'm wondering, do you have friends or neighbors or other folks around you who are also in this stage of life? And is there any way to sort of accompany each other through the messy middle of all of this?
Yeah, they're the ones who say it's going to be really, really great. It's like, wait, you're ahead of me. Slow down. I want you to feel sorry with me here for a minute.
Yes. That's so interesting.
Are they ahead of you longitudinally? Are those people that have been retired for a longer period of time?
Yes.
And did they experience this interim period and maybe they've just forgotten about it? Or was it a glide path for them?
I think it was a glide path. No one has mentioned it. And I mentioned the melancholy and the sadness and the grief, and it just goes over the top of their heads.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
It is. I found it pretty interesting.
I think that there is an element in, it's not a way to problem solve, but maybe you'll find some consolation in this. And I can't speak for your friends, I don't know them, but it sounds like you really cared very deeply about your work. And that is such a blessing to have work that you care deeply about, that you have identification with. But the inevitability of that is that the things that you care about, those are the things that break your heart. And
that's right.
I think that this heartbreak, it gets back to like the patience and the expectation and the not beating yourself up. It's going to take time, and it's completely normal what you're going through. There's this other concept, a psychological immune system. I don't know if you've heard this, but
I have not.
Essentially, yeah, much like we have biological immune systems, we also have psychological immune systems. This term was first coined by the Harvard research psychologist, Dan Gilbert. And our psychological immune systems, their job is essentially to integrate big changes and transitions into our narrative, into the story we tell ourselves about ourselves. And similar to a biological immune system, for small insults or injuries, minor scrapes, cuts, common colds, our psychological immune system works really quickly. You know, 1-2 days, we feel fine. But for novel changes or for large changes, for a new virus or a big gash that requires multiple stitches, it takes time, no different than our biological immune system. And I really think that all of these little nudges, rituals, reflecting on your values, these are all going to help. But at the end of the day, I think it's just accepting that your psychological immune system is going to need the time to integrate this big change. And the more that you judge yourself for not feeling happy or try to rush the process, even though it's inadvertent, the more that you risk getting in your own way.
Getting in my own way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is so hard for a pusher that likes growth and that for the last couple decades, like, you know, you made things happen. And it's so cliche to say, but it's like our ultimate strengths, right, become our kryptonite. And here, I don't think that you can make meaning suddenly happen or make growth happen. I have no doubt they're going to occur. My guess is we have the same conversation a year from now, and you'll look back on this period with all kinds of meaning and growth. But when you're in the thick of it, you just have to be gentle to yourself and nudge your way towards those things, not try to force them.
Yeah, you make me want to cry. I appreciate that.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Tears are not bad. We believe in tears
right.
on this show.
That's
so,
right.
But you got to be patient with yourself, and it's so, so hard to do. I learned this personally in my own life in a very different situation, but a while back I had sudden onset obsessive compulsive disorder and secondary depression.
Ooh.
And it just completely rocked my world, just devastated me, really debilitating. And I remember maybe being 2 or 3 months into therapy and telling my therapist that I just want to grow from this. You know, I had read Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. I just want to find some meaning in the suffering. And yet it all feels so pointless. And God bless her heart, what she told me is that sometimes things can just suck. And the meaning and growth, if they're going to happen, they'll happen on their own time. Like, your job is just to do the small things to get through. And that's life-changing advice for me. And it comes from Brooke to me. And if I can pass that on to you, and if you find that helpful, it's just so important.
Thank you. Yeah, I will take that and embrace that.
Okay, well, I really want to make sure that we have helped you today, Patty, because we do have our our growth mindset type A approach here at How To. Is there anything, first of all, has this felt helpful? And are there any lingering questions on your mind that Brad might be able to answer?
I think this has been fabulous. I was joking with Rosemary that it could turn into a therapy session, and it's given me a lot of food for thought. It's definitely made me feel supported, and that the grief and the sadness is actually recognized. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry that the others didn't allude toward that happening. I'm not at all surprised that you're feeling this way. It doesn't make it easier for you.
Mm-hmm.
But of course you feel grief and sadness at this loss and at this transition. And I really think just giving yourself permission, realizing that that's normal, that's okay, being gentle and kind to yourself while at the same time nudging yourself towards action in the direction of these values and curiosities, and then overlaying all that with patience. I hope we can talk in a year, and I'll give you my email offline or whatever, but I have a high degree of confidence that in a year from now, you'll look back on this and it won't seem as all-consuming, and you'll have grown quite a bit from it.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Patty. I appreciate your vulnerability in entrusting me with this conversation. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thanks to Patty for sharing her messy middle with us. I think we've all learned a lot from her vulnerability. And thanks to Brad, master of the helpful metaphor, man. Be sure to check out his book, Master of Change, How to Excel When Everything is Changing. Do you have a metaphorical house that needs symbolic renovation? We got you. Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001. We might just have you on the show. And if you like what you heard today, please give us a rating and review and tell a friend. That helps us help more people. How To is produced by Rosemary Belson with Kevin Bendis. Joel Meyer is a senior editor and Derek John is our executive producer. Merritt Jacob is senior technical director and composed our theme music. Charles Duhigg created the show. Carvel Wallace is my co-host. And I'm Courtney Martin. Thanks for listening.